The Tennessee Commission on Children and Youth released its annual report this week detailing the trends in the state of the child in the state of Tennessee. One part of that, 1 in 3 high school girls said they had gone without eating for 24 hours or more, taken diet pills, powders, or liquids, or reported vomiting, taking laxatives, or skipping meals to lose weight. We talk about that with Melissa Spaulding, a licensed professional counselor. When you heard that, did it surprise you?
Unfortunately, no, didn't surprise me. I think that's been, unfortunately, the reality for quite a while now. I'm also very glad that there's a lot more awareness coming to that issue.
I bet there are a lot of parents, though, that hear 1 in 3. I mean, your circle of friends, basically.
Yeah,
one of the young ladies is going to be dealing with this.
Yes. I'm sure for parents and educators and lots of our support people, medical, nurses, like things like that, that is a staggering figure. It's one of those things, unfortunately, that can be very easy for people to hide. And with different trends and influences and things like that, it has been a growing pattern for our young people.
One would think right out of the gate that it's an issue of worried about body image, worried about how you look, especially for teenage girls. Is it more than that?
Yes. I definitely think that is a huge part of it. We live in the day and age of social media and socially speaking, like we have a lot of stereotypical ways that, and also maybe stereotypically women are supposed to look like, there's a lot of influence of, this is what my body looks like, that's not what such and such's body looks like, and everybody talks about that person being very attractive and like what I should look like and what people want. So there's certainly that influence behind it. And then there's some other things that come into it as far as we usually see that young person struggling with some other things, potentially some trauma, struggling with anxiety, depression, some other things that they're having a hard time processing and coping with. And that some of those symptoms of disordered eating come up as a means to try to cope and feel better and make sense of the world that they live in, but also the body that they're in.
Let's talk about kind of the societal part of this first. Has social media made it worse in terms, because before, I mean, you can think back to the 80s, it was just you saw Brooke Shields in a movie or you saw magazines, Cosmopolitan or whatever. But now social media is kind of that constant reinforcement.
Yep, and they have almost constant access to it. And our brains are not designed to be able to handle a magazine I can read and like sit down, or you know, the stimulation that comes from social media is, you know, we kind of say addictive. Like we start there, and then you're scrolling, and wow, an hour has passed, and I've been looking at things, and so that has profoundly influenced what our young people are able to have access to and see. I would say like there's some positive stuff on social media and some good accounts that our young people follow that are supportive and body positive. But there's also a lot of the other where, you know, there's very pro disordered eating sites and people out there, as well as just looking at, let's say, models or pictures of actresses, actors, that kind of thing that are airbrushed and fine tuned to look a certain way that aren't reality that our young people are also comparing themselves to.
Add to that, we know the impact of what your peers think.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know the horror stories of what goes on social media with shaming and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And then throw in their middle school and puberty and development, because generally the onset of disordered eating happens around that 12-year-old age. And we know that period of time for us is really weird in our bodies. There's all kinds of change. Like there's typically weight gain and shifting in your body that's happening to like before you start to get taller and spread out a little bit more. And that's really hard for young people to go through because of that element of bullying and, you know, not looking like my peer who has developed differently than me.
Melissa, in your work, how powerful is the bullying, the comments, the cuts, the cracks, all of that?
I would say profoundly, something that comes up with clients all the time, especially our, I would say adults too, but for sure young people. Comments that are made at school or also not even directly, comments that are made indirectly at home through social media towards one another or texting. Now bullying can look, it's so much more invasive, I guess is a good word for that, that it's not, you know, when I was in school, it was just, you know, people could say things to your face and that was kind of about it unless they wanted to call you on the phone and like maybe say that over the phone, which wasn't going to happen. But now, like, it can be a, you know, a comment that's made on a social media post that another a person has made.
And it gets shared where that comment mm-hmm. that you made a moment ago, that person says that to you.
And everybody else can see it. Yeah. Potentially. Or share that with, yeah, each other.
Melissa Spaulding is our guest. We're talking about eating disorders and the prevalence that they have within young people in our society. Melissa Spaulding is our guest. We're reacting to the report released this week from the Tennessee Commission on Children and Youth about 1 in 3 high school girls dealing with an eating disorder. So we've talked about the social part, the influence that our friends, and we use that word lightly, can have on us. There's also the issue of control, and whenever you talk about eating disorders, you hear that word, control. What do we mean?
The essence of, for our young people, well, and I guess I'd throw us as an adults in there too, because there's a lot that we don't have control over. We do have a lot of power over our circumstances and how we respond and that kind of thing, but for young people, they don't have a lot of autonomy at that point in life. It's, I have to go to school. Adults or other outside forces are kind of dictating what that looks like. And so one of the few things that they have some control over is what they put in their body. And because the dynamics of going to school and maybe families not having meals together and, you know, just the rush of life for most families now, those things can also go very unnoticeable. Because there's not as much together time around food.
And so you have that ability in this situation to have control of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's power of that.
Right. And that feeling internally feels really good to have a sense of control. And that's part of one of the dangerous things about disordered eating is that feeling of feeling in control and kind of somewhat of a thrill or peace that you get from that. Is something that you want over and over and over again. And that's why disordered eating, as far as mental health issues go, is incredibly dangerous because it has pretty quick and profound impact on your physical body.
Where does it usually start? Is there kind of how it begins?
That can be different with different cases. Oftentimes we see a lot of trauma or something that has happened to kind of start some of that. That can be something, a specific incident, for instance, or that might be some things of like bullying or neglectful behavior at home or things like that that maybe aren't just isolated. And sometimes it's a response to that of like, I can't control what's going on around me or how my parents are, how my peers are. And it's a way to get control kind of that way.
Where does the idea originate of actually doing this?
You know, my first gut instinct was like, well, it's kind of the same. But that's where I think some of the influence of social media has come into play as far as seeing peers of like, you know, oh, I didn't eat for a couple of days and I lost weight or, you know, kind of it being kind of shared as a way to kind of cope and it's cool, it works and that kind of thing. There might also just be some like instinctual thing that we kind of have at that point of like, well, I don't got anything else. So, you know.
So if it's 1 in 3, I think it kind of naturally tells us, at least we hope, we have our fingers crossed, that it doesn't go further for most of those people. But you, I'm sure, have seen cases where it becomes habitual, mm-hmm. where you do vomit after every meal, you do miss meals, you do misuse laxatives. All of those things come into play. Is it, again, that control? It feels good. It makes you happy.
And it kind of works. You know, if someone's to the point where, let's say, they have lost some weight and they get a lot of positive feedback from that, from family or friends or whoever, that can kind of be a self-rewarding cycle. And then there's just kind of the components of your physical body also get used to that type of thing. And so you'd have, like, your metabolism slows down. You know, there's some different things that happen that it takes a while of, if you want to use the word, being sober from disordered eating, for your body to be able to get back to normal functioning with your metabolism and just your different body processes. So sometimes there's, you know, this time period of your body, that's body memory. You're just like doing what you know to do kind of thing without active thought. I read there was a study that was several years ago that came out that said like the average length of treatment for someone with disordered eating was about 7 years. And that, of course, depends on the dynamics of that. There's a lot of issues that go around getting treatment for folks with eating disorders. And oftentimes, if it's fairly severe, it would really involve some inpatient, some really intensive work, because it is such an an issue that encompasses all of life. Like, it's not like other substance use. Like, I can't just stop drinking or using drugs. Like, I have to eat to live life. And so the process of getting to a point where you can have a healthy relationship with food and your body takes a significant period of time.
Let's come back to that as we talk about eating disorders. Melissa Spalding is our guest. Melissa Spalding, some of her work involves those with eating disorders as we talk about this issue. You hear so many times when this issue comes up that parents, those around the person, they say, I didn't know, I didn't realize. Is that common to what you heard?
Yes, and I think that's very true, because again, there's a part of it that is very secretive, and young people might be very good at hiding those things, and you might not notice until, you know, there's been a significant decrease in weight, or we're having issues with, like, getting dizzy while playing with sports, like our body's not being able to keep up with what we had been able to do before, where parents might miss a lot of that.
Are there some common signs that a parent should look for?
I think one of the maybe bigger things outside of, like, the balance of and keeping an eye on, like, making sure they are eating, but it can also be a lot of language around food, you know, like, I can't eat that. That'll, you know, I'm afraid I'll gain weight, or I really have to, like, go running all the time after, like, I eat, or, you know, things like I'm going to the bathroom after we eat. You know, you can look for some obvious signs of that. I would also say it's really good just to sit down with your young people and just kind of ask, hey, you know, this is probably a good a way to get that into conversation of, hey, I read this study and I heard that on the radio. Can you just share with me, is that any of your experience at school, or has that ever come up in your mind of, oh, I really don't feel like eating, or I'm afraid my body doesn't look the way it needs to, and just opening up that conversation.
I guess there's also the extreme cases of I don't know what the technical term, but you hear it called binge and purge, which is, you know, just absolutely eating a half gallon of ice cream, for example, just those extreme situations that come into play that just are not natural.
Yeah. Yeah. And they kind of mentioned in the thing, anorexia, which is restricting, or bulimia. Purging can also look like excessive exercise, or taking laxatives. I did mention that. Another form of disordered eating is binge eating disorder. And that may or may not be characterized by purging that in some way. Sometimes people have the struggle of just eating larger quantities of food than is normal in a sitting.
We think of this, for obvious reasons, as more of a female issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case, though.
No. It stereotypically has always been understood as more female-oriented, but males also struggle with that. It can look different, and I think socially speaking, we're not always attuned to look for that in males, but very much so. They can also be struggling with the way their body looks and how they're eating. And it could also be more common to have that excessive exercise piece go with it.
You've mentioned one thing to do, which is to have the conversation, to bring it up and discuss it with your teens. If you have a fear of that, if you believe that your teen might be struggling with this, are there some ways that you would encourage people to reach out and talk to him or her?
I think trying to have an open conversation about how, you know, the parent first can help support them. And that may look like, hey, can we seek out a counselor who has some training in that to go talk to? And now in the state of Tennessee, we have tons of access, not even just in our area, but you can also see people telehealth all across the state. So helping them try to be open to getting some support. If we identify those things really early on, it's obviously a better time for us to step in and start treatment, so that hopefully someone's not going 7 years, or, you know, that they're not in this for a long part of their life, that we can step in and do a lot of that treatment early on and then get some resolution of that. So trying to have those open conversations. It's, I think, hard for parents and maybe just in general with public to have the response of, well, just eat. Like, you just have to sit down and you have to eat this. And that can be create more negative than positive. I know that that's the right response of parents who love their kids and just want them to eat, and they know that they need to eat. But we need to be able to do that in a healthy way that they can continue and maintain, that it's not we're going to force them to eat a plate of food and make sure they eat for the next, and then at what point step away from that. Like, we want them to be able to do that work and have a healthy relationship with food.